Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, thank goodness that's over. That's all I can say. You know, if the election campaign gets any... Oh, it is. It started already. I noticed. Yeah. It has gotten longer. And good luck to Ms. Palin. Now, ladies and gentlemen, she had to... It's unfair for them to be leaking that she had to be coached, that the country she could see from her porch was Russia. That she didn't... I don't believe she didn't know that. But a sign that, though much has changed, we're still, in some ways, the very same country. Two studies came out, coincidentally, on the same day this week. One got a lot of press attention. This is it. Teenagers who watch a lot of television featuring flirting, necking, discussion of sex, and sex scenes are much more likely than their peers to get pregnant or get a partner pregnant, according to the first study to directly link steamy programming to teen pregnancy. The study tracked more than 712 to 17-year-olds for 3 years, and it found that those who viewed the most sexual content on TV were about twice as likely to be involved in a pregnancy as those who saw the least. Watching this kind of sexual content on television is a powerful factor in increasing the likelihood of a teen pregnancy, said the lead researcher. That, as I say, got a lot of attention. This study, released the same day, got almost none. Children and teenagers who play violent video games show increased physical aggression months afterward, according to new research that adds another layer of evidence to the continuing debate over the video game habits of youngsters. The research, published in the journal Pediatrics, brings together three longitudinal studies, one from the U.S., two from Japan, examining the content of games, how often they're played, and aggressive behaviors later in a school year. The U.S. research was the first in the nation to look at the effects of violent video games over time. The collaboration with Japanese researchers was particularly telling because video games are popular there and crime and aggression are less prevalent. Some gamers have cited Japan's example as evidence that violent games are not harmful, yet the studies produced similar findings in both countries. When you find consistent effects across two different cultures, you're looking at a pretty powerful phenomenon, said the lead researcher. One can no longer claim this is somehow a uniquely American phenomenon. This is a general phenomenon that occurs across cultures. The study in this country showed an increased likelihood of getting into a fight at school. Who are you looking at? Or being identified by a teacher or peer as being physically aggressive 5 to 6 months later in the same school year. And yet, as I say, I got almost no attention because it wasn't about sex. I would feel so sad about this next item, except I've never been invited. News Corporation, owned by Rupert Murdoch, is canceling its extravagant Hollywood party, normally held at the Hilton in Midtown Manhattan. That's extravagant, the Hilton? The annual party is for all News Corporation employees, and yet I've never been... including the Fox News Channel, Fox Business Network, New York Post, blah, blah, blah. Rumor was circulating that the kibosh had been put on the bash, but now it's been confirmed. So no big Christmas party for Rupert and his people. The value of being dragged in late into a presidential campaign and being made an instant celebrity. Police stopped Joe the Plumber. Those are three words you haven't heard lately. Police stopped Joe the Plumber for speeding last week, but didn't issue a ticket out of concern it would reflect negatively on the Toledo Police Department. Officers tracked Samuel J. Wurzelbacher, real name, driving about 50 miles per hour in a 35-mile-per-hour zone in his Dodge Durango. He was given a verbal warning because of that ongoing investigation. Which ongoing investigation? Doesn't say. And because a citation could have, quote, negative repercussions to the department and the city as a whole, according to the report written by Patrolman Bailey. Bet you he can get a ticket now. And on the subject of the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen, listener Ron writes, he got a new TV with digital HD to watch the election returns. I'm watching on over the air with rabbit ears. I noticed the digital channels all have lip sync way off and often pauses, freezes, and pixelates. It's terrible. Anyone with over-the-air TV will be living in the dark ages come February, says listener Ron. So welcome to the Dark Ages, and hello, welcome to the show.
What does that mean? Outrages upon human dignity.
Well, I'll try to find out for you, sir. But in the meantime, hello, welcome to the show.
Next time you're found with your chin on the ground, there's a lot to be learned. So look around.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky hopes.
So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
When troubles call and your back's to the wall, there's a lot to be learned. That wall could fall.
Once there was a silly old ram, thought he'd punch a hole in a dam. No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam,
'cause he had high hopes. He had high hopes. He had high apple pie in the sky hopes.
So anytime you're feeling bad, instead of feeling sad, just remember that ram. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt
dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. What's happening with our friend Pakistan, you may be asking? We haven't heard a lot from them lately. Let's check in, shall we? All right, then. What? Oh, yes. Now I have to do this. Pakistan's defense minister this week cautioned the newly appointed head of U.S. Central Command, General Petraeus, that launching further missile strikes in Pakistan's troubled tribal areas could increase tensions between them and us. He issued the blunt warning during Petraeus' first official visit to Pakistan after taking control of the entirety of Central Command. The defense minister, Mukhtar, also called for more coordination between the U.S. and Pakistan, said the recent increase in U.S.-led cross-border strikes had created bad blood between the two allies. The defense ministry said in a statement that frequent attacks inside Pakistan by U.S. drones could generate, quote, anti-American sentiments and create outrage and uproar, not outroar and uprage, among Pakistanis. Huh. They're our friends. The visit came after sharp diplomatic clashes between American and Pakistan officials over the U.S. action in those areas, because we do it from the air, where it's clean and neat, and only civilians, no, I mean, only the people we're targeting die. So why would you mind about that? Why would that create uproar and outrage? Now, ladies and gentlemen, the piece of music featured at the beginning of this broadcast was, of course, by Frank Sinatra from a motion picture. And a few months later, John F. Kennedy ran for the presidency of the United States. And Frank Sinatra called his songwriting buddies and said he wanted some special lyrics. And here they were.
K-E-N-N-E-B-Y. Jack's the nation's favorite guy. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track, 'cause he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. 1960's the year for him. High hopes. Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy. To keep America's
Of course, some years later, Frank Sinatra had changed political affiliation and was one of the main supporters of Ronald Reagan. So look around you. Look around at all the celebrities supporting Obama. In 10 years or so, maybe 8 years, which of them is going to be leading the charge for Sarah Palin? And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Speaking of which, from the Telegraph in London, the Secret Service warned the Obama family in mid-October that the Secret Service had seen a dramatic increase in the number of threats against the Democratic candidate, coinciding with Sarah Palin's attacks. Michelle Obama was so upset she turned to her friend and campaign advisor Valerie Jarrett and said, quote, "Why would they try to make people hate us?" unquote. But wait, there's more. From Sky News in Britain, owned by Rupert Murdoch, final negotiations are underway with the Iraqi government to have all British troops out of Iraq by next summer. Iraq is pressing for the withdrawal of all foreign troops. Really? Is that what they want? The situation has changed dramatically in Basra in the south of the country since the Iraqi government took on the local militia early this year. As a result, the British presence would be all but over by next summer. From The Age in Australia, CNN's U.S. election night event, in which reporter Jessica Yellen and rapper Will.i.am appeared on set as three-dimensional so-called holograms, was little more than smoke and mirrors, physics experts say. In what was billed as a world first, Yellen appeared to be beamed from Chicago into the network's New York studio for an interview with Anchor Wolf Blitzer. But in fact, Blitzer was looking at little more than a red mark on the floor. Oh, Wolf, I'm so sorry. Blitzer made every attempt to hide the fact that the hologram was fake, saying, quote, "Jessica, you're a terrific hologram." And he liked the hologram because we can have a more intimate conversation. A second hologram interview was aired between Anderson Cooper and Will.i.am, who, like Yellen, was in Chicago. According to Hans-Jürgen Kreutzer, theoretical physics professor and holography expert at Dalhousie University, they were simply 2D images superimposed onto the TV broadcast. They were, in fact, tomograms, or images captured from all sides, in this case by 35 high-definition cameras set in a ring inside a special tent, reconstructed by computers and displayed on the screen. A real hologram would have meant the images were projected into space, which did not occur. Blitzer and Cooper could not see their interview subjects except on a monitor, the way the weather guy sees the weather map, even though what's behind him is just a green screen. To perform the stunt, CNN used technology from Vizart, based in Norway, and Sportview, based in Israel. In an interview with the Norwegian publication Dagens Medier, Vizart technical director Ole Jacobsen, yes, they do have names like that. It's not a stereotype. Ole Jacobsen said that contrary to CNN's claims, quote, "it's not technically a hologram," unquote. So you can trust CNN because they're lying about what they have on the they're making up a hologram for you. Why would? Oh, you know why. Because it's, ooh. More news from outside the bubble from Iranian TV. Iran's cord blood bank says $2.5 billion will be invested over the next 5 years in Iran's stem cell research. Yeah, they're so religious, they're putting $2.5 billion into stem cell research. Iranian scientists test treatments on mice for everything from heart disease to multiple sclerosis. The fund will be used for the development of such facilities in other Iranian cities. Stem cell research centers will soon be opened in all major cities, says the director of the blood bank. Iranian scientists developed human embryonic stem cell lines with the approval of Ayatollah Khamenei. Iran has some of the most liberal laws providing grounds for such studies. Muslim clerics say that life begins 3 months after conception, which enables scientists to have access to human embryonic stem cells left over from fertilization trials. From the Independent newspaper in London, the Bush administration has conceded that, oh my God, who knew this? An Israeli-Palestinian peace deal by the year-end deadline established at the beginning of this year is no longer possible. Now, I lose my bet. We don't think it's likely it'll happen, says Dana Perino, White House press spokesman. Who would have thunk it? And also from Iranian television, another story from Iranian television about Ahmad Chalabi. It's almost as if he's an important figure to the Iranians in some way. Huh. Now, here's what they say. Politician Ahmad Chalabi has accused Iraqi intelligence service of receiving funds from foreign sources, urging a probe into the issue. Chalabi says he's not after the dismissal of the current intelligence chief, because he's going to be out of a job by next month, by March anyway. The Iranians continue to be interested in Ahmad Chalabi. Something you wouldn't know except for News from Outside the Bubble, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The government's study to track the health of children who lived in the FEMA trailers after Hurricane Katrina is still stuck in the planning stages, 3 years after the families first began complaining about health problems related to formaldehyde fumes in the trailers. According to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention haven't figured out yet how they're going to find the children. Well, I would say just follow the coughs. But that's just me. The children moved out of the trailers months or even years ago. It hasn't settled on a scientific methodology or obtained funding or the necessary White House approval. You need White House approval to track the health of the children in the FEMA trailers with formaldehyde fumes, ladies and gentlemen. It does not plan to publish results until 2015, by which time the children will be grown-ups. The agency began discussing the study a year ago, and the agency hopes to award a contract in the spring. It's a long process to get this going, says the CDC scientist in charge. 10,000 of the trailers are still occupied, according to the AJC, although I thought most of them had been emptied out by now. Heidi Sinclair, a Baton Rouge-based pediatrician who treated dozens of children for symptoms she believes are related to formaldehyde exposure, said many of her patients have moved to different parts of the country. CDC should have started doing this a year before they wanted to start the study. These people are going to be impossible to track down. Most of them have pay-as-you-go cell phones and have already moved. But a researcher at the CDC says there are methods to track down the children. Ooh. All right, then. The longer it takes, well, you know that. Okay. So, a matter of some urgency for some people, but not apparently for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Some good prevention there. Because things are going so well, ladies and gentlemen, with Yucca Mountain, the United States' first and, at this point, only purported putative repository for high-level nuclear waste. Because things are going so well there, it's so many years behind schedule, the United States has now decided, the Bush administration, therefore, has decided it will recommend that Congress give up the idea of creating a second nuclear waste dump on the other side of the continent. Because the western one, as I say, is doing just fine. The director of the Energy Department's Waste Management Program, Edward Sproat, says the process of trying to open one repository has been so slow and expensive that this was not a good time to start looking at another. I guess that's a good reason for not opening another investigation of formaldehyde fumes and their effects on children, because the first one is going so slowly. The future of the entire repository program is in flux. President-elect Obama has called for finding another solution. Alaska. Bury it in Alaska. You think that's what they're going to come up with? But Sproat noted that the law called for his department to pursue the opening of Yucca as slowly as it is going. By the way, the United States government promised utility companies we would begin accepting nuclear waste way back in 1998 and began accepting payments from them of one-tenth of a cent per kilowatt hour generated at their nuclear reactors. Government now says the Yucca Mountain will open at the earliest in 2020. Because of the delay, the government will owe damages to the utilities of $11 billion or more. So add that to the price of clean, cheap, safe nuclear energy. $11 billion just to say sorry to the utilities, we didn't open the waste dump in time. But a geologist and nuclear expert who spoke at a conference this week says Yucca Mountain may never open. It does not meet international standards for a nuclear waste repository, ladies and gentlemen, because it's located in an area of active earthquakes and volcanoes. Good night. Have fun. 10,000 years. It'll be fine. Earthquakes and volcanoes won't happen over a 10,000-year period, will they? Of course they won't. That would be physically impossible. See ya.
I'll be your imagination. If you forget how to pretend, when you only got a beginning, I'll be your end. If everything falls apart, I'll be your brand new star. And all you got to do, baby, is be you. All you got to do, baby, is be you. I'll be your every kind of money. When you're down to your last dime, I'll be a year or two. When you're running out of time, and if your star don't ever shine, you'll still be that little light of mine. All you got to do, baby, is be you now. All you got to do, baby, is be you. I'll come up with something, as long as you are somewhere. No matter where or when you're needing it, sugar, when you're craving something sweet. out of sync, I'll get you back on the beat. You're still my horse and case. You never ever win a race, but all you got to do, baby, is be you. All you got to do, baby, is be you. When your train is running slow, when the signs all say stop, I'll make them all say go. If your star don't ever shine, you'll still be that little light of mine. But all you got to do, baby, is be you now. Just be you. All you got to do, baby, is be you. All you got to do, baby, is be you. Just be you. All you got to do, baby, is be you. All you got to do, baby, it's just me, you.
This is LeShow. By the way, the story that quoted the scientist and researcher is pointing out the volcanoes and earthquakes and things. Kind of at the bottom of the story, buried lead. From the New York Times, bearing the lead along with the waste, you might say. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, we were obsessed about our election. The British have been obsessed about something else.
BBC Radio 2.
On the 18th of October, the BBC broadcast an exchange between Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross on the Russell Brand Show on Radio 2. This concerned the actor Andrew Sachs and his granddaughter, Georgina Bailey. Some of this exchange was left on the voicemail of Mr. Sachs. The conversation was grossly offensive and an unacceptable intrusion into the private lives of both Mr. Sachs and Ms. Bailey. It was a serious breach of editorial standards and should never have been recorded or broadcast. The BBC would like to apologise unreservedly to Mr. and Mrs. Sachs, Ms. Bailey, and their family, and to our audiences as licence fee payers.
All right, then. That would settle it, along with the resignation of a second official from the network that broadcast the offending phone calls. But it won't. Could rely on that. Meanwhile, an American performer has had to apologize as well. Dennis Leary, in his upcoming book, devotes a chapter to blaming the rise of autism on incompetent parents. Quote, there's a huge boom in autism right now because inattentive mothers and competitive dads want an explanation for why their expletive kids can't compete academically, so they throw money into the happy laps of shrinks, he writes in the book. Now, even before the book has come out, he's expressed his remorse to those who've protested and felt offended. Quote, Dennis Leary, I apologize to all parents of children with autism for any pain the out-of-context quotes from my books may have caused. He felt the media misled the public by plucking a couple of sentences from the chapter, Autism Schmautism. Yeah, I could see what his complaint is based on. We didn't include the title. Deadline London, Turkey, the Nation, not the Bird, said on Friday a British television documentary about its orphanages using Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, in an undercover role could harm the welfare of the children involved. The way in which the disguised Duchess of York was used to shoot scenes with a hidden camera was done without taking in consideration the adverse effects of such visits on the development of these children, says the Turkish Foreign Minister, Ali Babacan. Oh, come on. I believe anything Ali Babacan says. He made the comments about the documentary at a joint news conference with British Foreign Secretary David Miliband. That's right, Miliband and Babacan, where Turkey's bid to join the European Union was relegated to a minor role. Babacan said Turkey had launched an inquiry into the allegations made in the documentary. Fergie, the Duchess of York, has apologized for any embarrassment the expose may have caused Turkey. I'm not a political person, she says. I am apolitical and multi-faith. Turkey had previously accused Fergie of smearing the country's image. Undercover Fergie. She really has lost weight. Deadline Hanoi, the head of the Hanoi chapter of the Communist Party, has apologized for controversial comments he made while visiting people in flooded areas last week. On Sunday of last week, Hanoi Party boss Pham Quang Nhi, I'd change it to Babacan if I were you, sir, told a reporter from the news website Vietnamnet that while checking out the situation on the ground, quote, I found that unlike in the old days, people rely a lot on the state. They just wait for the government to supply this, support that. They don't try their best to do it themselves, unquote. Heck of a job. The comments sparked widespread controversy. On Thursday, his secretary confirmed that his boss had apologized, offering his sincere apologies to readers and to the people for my remarks, which have drawn criticism and made people angry. Several Vietnamese bloggers, yes, they have them, said Nhi's remarks were an insult to the memory of the over 20 Hanoians who have died in the country's flooding. I guess that war really was unnecessary. We and the Vietnamese have so much in common. Japan's new Air Force chief apologized this week for his predecessor, who was fired last week for denying that Japan was an aggressor in World War II. And the new Air Force chief vowed to restore pride in his troops. Kenichiro Hokazono replaces Toshio Tamagami, whose history essay rejected the government's view and sparked anger in China and Korea, where many suffered under Japan's wartime aggression. I reflect deeply and apologize from my heart that a person in the important position of Air Force Chief of Staff damaged the people's trust by publicly expressing an opinion different from that of the government, said Hokazono. I intend to take the lead in creating an open and active Air Force, full of confidence and pride. Stand tall, Japanese flyboy. Deadline Vatican City, at the end of the three-day historic dialogue between 48 Catholic and Muslim leaders and scholars, Pope Benedict the 16th said this week that to safeguard the freedom of individuals to follow his faith, religious persecution is not an acceptable practice. At the same time, the Pope apologized to Muslims for a remark he made in 2006, in which he linked Muslims to violence in the past. Federal prosecutors said this week they won't bring no criminal charges against Elliot Spitzer, the former governor of New York. Investigators found he solicited high-priced call girls. Federal prosecutors typically do not prosecute clients of prostitution rings. A remorseful Spitzer issued another statement in which he expressed relief that he will not face charges and apologized once again for his actions. To the readers of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, in Tuesday's editions, a graphic on page A5 detailing the presidential candidate's stands on various issues erroneously stated that Senator John McCain favors abortion rights. When we became aware of the error, we corrected it on our website It was a serious mistake, all the more so because it appeared on Election Day. We take full responsibility for it. What happened? The Associated Press sent us the graphic with the correct positions attributed. In the course of reshaping the graphic to fit our page, we inadvertently transposed the candidates' positions. The error should have been caught before it went to press. It wasn't. To all of our readers, please accept our apology. Dateline Asheville, North Carolina. The Cumberland County School System is investigating the actions of a former Asheville teacher criticized for belittling a student who voiced support for John McCain. The parents of that student and the student herself said that teacher Diantha Harris did nothing wrong. "She's usually messing around," said Kathy Thompson, who was in Harris' fifth grade class when a Swedish film crew visited to make a documentary on American politics. "When she said that, I knew she was messing around." Harris on Friday said she regrets making the comment about her student's father. She said she was not intending to advocate for a candidate. "I called the parents and I apologized, and I apologized to Kathy. If I could take anything back from that video, it would be that statement. I should not have said that." Unquote. I was a school teacher for 2 years in my early 20s. Ladies and gentlemen, I never messed around. Well, that's just me. More about Rupert Murdoch, the Australian Capital Territory. It's like the District of Columbia, only south. Has launched a legal assault against global media mogul Rupert Murdoch, claiming that his news corporation owes the federal coffers more than $84 million in Australian in unpaid taxes and penalties. A tax avoidance scheme is what the territory says the news corporation is engaged in. Case came a day after Murdoch announced job cuts at his Australian and British newspapers. Murdoch's lawyers deny the claims. Why did this get? I have no idea why that's in an apology of the week. Maybe he thinks he's sorry. I don't know. From Fred Barnes, executive editor of the Weekly Standard, "I was especially rough on Nicole Wallace of the McCain campaign, who I identified as the one who was responsible for getting all of those expensive clothes and then being cowardly and not admitting she was the one. Well, it turns out I have discovered I was wrong. I apologize for my mistake, and I apologize particularly to Nicole Wallace." President-elect Barack Obama telephoned Nancy Reagan shortly after his debut news conference on Friday to apologize for what he called a careless and offhanded remark he made about her. He expressed his admiration and affection for Mrs. Reagan that so many Americans share. They had a warm conversation. Afghan President Hamid Karzai says an airstrike by coalition forces earlier this week killed some 40 civilians and wounded about 28 civilians in Kandahar province. He called on President-elect Obama to make it his priority to stop the killing of civilians. The U.S. military says it's checking. The spokesman said if innocent people were killed in this operation, we apologize and express our condolences to the families and the people of Afghanistan. Ifin. That's just some ifin. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, let's dig deep.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice presidency. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 Elections come. Elections go. That's what elections do. Purposeful, serious people think the shifting winds of popular taste are interesting fodder for a conversation around a secure and disclosed dinner table. But the work goes on. Far as we know, Osama bin Laden didn't take Election Day off. Hell, far as we know, he's working as a sales associate at a Mervyn's in Poughkeepsie. But that's a whole different kettle of falafel. The point is, it was a week like any other, only a lot busier. Some people slacken their pace as the finish line approaches, assuming it even is the finish line. Others summon up a profound final kick. Of course, we took a few moments out to sign a condolence card for poor old John McCain. That'll teach him to use our people in his campaign. And Lynn sent a cake in the shape of Africa to Sarah Palin. But then it was back to the secure and disclosed grindstone. Constituent chief had tasked me, although he didn't know it, to tackle a thorny problem. An increasing number of our own judges were poking their noses inside the tent we called Gitmo. Most of them were still being good little girls and boys, keeping all the evidence sealed in their little hearings and such, but it was just a matter of time before some hide-head in robes put the whole thing out on the street like grandma's bloomers. At that point, the entire grand edifice of our war against global Islamo-fascism collapses faster than a hooker's credit score. That's item one in our no-can-let-happen file. So I found myself appearing in the office of a bureaucrat with a little problem of his own. Michael Griffin, the head of NASA. Things were about to be looking up for both of us. Wednesday, 10:17 a.m.
Well, Mr. Vice President, it's been a long time since you favored us with a visit.
Count your blessings, Mr. Griffin.
Oh, I do. It's just that... Care for some Sprite?
No, I'm fine. That stuff gives me arrhythmia. So look, my friend, I know things are a little tight around here right now.
Oh, Mr. Vice President, they're worse than tight. Mm-hmm. Our Project Moon base is slipping another year behind schedule. Our Mars mission, which, of course, President Bush assigned to us, is severely hampered. Our
Mike, I can't call you Mike, can I? Mike, the President's interest in the Mars mission is eclipsed only by his interest in everything else. Let's face it, pal. This agency isn't getting a haircut on its budget. It's getting a buzz cut. Personally, I think it's a shame.
Well, so do I, but... You do?
Yeah. I guess I have a soft spot in my stent for all the old astronaut stuff. And the hopefulness crap that it engendered. Agencies like this represent what's best about our country that's not totally secret.
Well... A lot of this nation's best and brightest scientists and engineers feel that way too, sir. At least they did before we had to lay them off. I just wish there was some way to get the old Apollo spirit jump-started again, but in the current budget environment, it's next to impossible.
Mike, I can still call you Mike. Oh. Nothing's impossible on the dark side. It's the whole purpose of the exercise. What if I suggested to you that a slight change in mission... could open the way to a substantial increase in the resource package your agency captures.
Well, frankly, Mr. Vice President, given the current circumstances, my reaction would be quite off the record. Mm-hmm. Screw the moon and tell Mars the news.
Mike, I'm going to have to blindfold you before I can show you what we've got in mind.
All right. I do tend to doze off when my eyes are...
Wake up, pal. Now... You know, those of us who may or may not be in the executive branch have a little problem with certain individuals.
Leakers? I swear I haven't talked to a reporter since I got here. They don't even know
not I'm... Not leakers. Detainees. Terrorists. Drivers for terrorists. The worst of the worst. And the next worst of them. People who it's in the best interest of everybody except themselves that they never see the outside of the box they happen to be in.
Well, I'm sure they're a problem. I read that the court has said they have certain rights.
Interesting, isn't it? How many Republicans you can have on a court and they still don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
There are those of us who are in a position to know what we think, who feel that Guantanamo and its mission have been compromised. And of course, the election results have just made that unhappy reality come a little bit closer in time.
You know, Mr. Vice President, I feel a little sheepish bringing this up, but I thought this was going to be about NASA.
Oh, it is. And what I've got here is an artist's conception of a high-security detention facility in Earth orbit.
Well, I'm still blindfolded.
That's why I'm telling you. Materials have been specced, single-source contractors ready to go. All it needs is a sign-off from you and a commitment to lift off before January 20th. And your agency is back among the popular kids, quicker than you can say, Houston, we've got a budget.
Well, that's certainly the kind of challenge we used to take on before breakfast, Mr. Cheney.
Call me Mr. Vice President. I've still got my badge.
But, and I know he's not in the room at your request, but I think our agency's counsel, Mr. Katzenbrenner, would want me to ask you, doesn't this project mean that NASA becomes legally responsible for whoever may or may not be part of the payload? I mean, should anything happen to them during the life of the orbiter?
Or after. These folks are like what we thought about the housing market. They're going to go up, and they're never going to come down. Yeah, I guess in a pettifogger's dream, you're responsible for these folks. But, Mike, last time I looked, there were no orbital vehicles when the Constitution was written. Any rights anybody may or may not have seem to me to end just about the time gravity does. I've got a legal opinion here that says just about the same thing. I know you can't see it, but it's here. And I think, were he to know about it, the president would share our feelings on that. In fact, I'm sure of it. Very sure.
Right, right. Well, so you're saying that the design work on the interior, the shackles and bolts and whatever, that's already been done.
No need for that kind of stagecraft, Mike. A crappy little tin can with substandard armoring against space junk collisions is unpleasant enough for these monsters and their sub-monstrous enablers. But yes, all the work has been done. Let's put it this way, my friend. The Air Force would love to have this account. I just thought you might love it a little bit more, given the resources it would bring to this agency. But, you know, I could be wrong. You could rightly feel that your agency has too much in the way of resources. Anyway, the project exists. It just needs a letterhead.
Of course, it's not that easy to sign something blindfolded.
I'll guide your hand. I just don't want to force it. I'm sensitive that way. You in, Mike? Means an invite to the A Christmas party for a change.
Proud to serve, Mr. Vice President. Proud to serve.
Of course, the Air Force wanted no part of Operation Fly Problem Away, but that little detail is domiciled slightly above Mike's pay grade. End a partial diary for the beginning of November 2008. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
esperando a volta. Volta que redonda, volta que a senhora caprichosa, sensual, faz mudar os ventos, traz os novos tempos, cheia de desejos, a saudade faz.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? Come on, Glenn. Not a lot of time yet. Thank you very much. Billions of tons of carbon sequestered in the world's peat bogs could be released into the atmosphere in the coming decades as a result of global warming, according to a new analysis of the interplay between peat bogs, water tables, and climate change. Such an atmospheric release of even a small percentage of the carbon locked away in the world's peat bogs would dwarf man-made carbon emissions, according to scientists at Harvard, Worcester State College, and the Japan Agency for Marine Earth Science. This is in the journal Geoscience. Higher temperature could cause water tables to drop substantially, causing more peat to dry and decompose. Over several centuries, some 40% of carbon could be lost from shallow peat bogs, while the losses could total as much as 86% in deep bogs. After 8 years of near-zero growth in atmospheric methane, levels have again started to rise. This is not good news for future global warming. This is in the Geophysical Research Letters. On the other hand, the world could eliminate fossil fuel use by the year 2090, saving 18 trillion in future fuel costs and creating a $360 billion industry that provides half the world's electricity. That cheering news from the European Council, European Renewable Energy Council, and Greenpeace. This is one of few reports, even by lobby groups, to look at in detail at how energy use would have to be overhauled to meet the toughest scenarios for curbing greenhouse gases. More radical scenarios could eliminate coal use by 2050 if new power generation plants shifted quickly to renewables. Solar power, biomass, geothermal and wind could be the leading energies by 2090, according to the report. If climate disasters are to be averted, atmospheric CO2 must be reduced below the levels that already exist today, according to a study published in Open Atmospheric Science Journal. The authors assert that to maintain a planet similar to that on which civilization developed, an optimum CO2 level would be less than 350 parts per million, a dramatic change from most previous studies, which suggested a danger level is likely to be 450 or higher. It's currently 385 parts per million. We have reached CO2 levels that compromise the stability of the polar ice sheets, says one of the authors, Mark Bagani, Yale professor of geology. How fast ice sheets and sea level will respond are still poorly understood, but given the potential size of the disaster, I think it's best not to learn this lesson firsthand. And emissions of a greenhouse gas that has 17,000 times the planet warming capacity of carbon dioxide are at least four times higher than had been previously estimated. Nitrogen trifluoride is used by the semiconductor industry to clean the chambers in which silicon chips are made. Yes, it was believed to have been a clean industry. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, a tip of the show, chapeau to the folks who came out to the 92nd Street Y Tribeca last week for Songs of the Bushmen Live. Next, in Los Angeles. Keep tuned, stay tuned. And thanks also to the folks at the Britannia Awards for being such pleasant hosts and a lovely audience. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radios, available around the world via the internets at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like not getting too disappointed too fast, if you'd agree with me then. To be with me then. Or just agree with me. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast and playlists of the music heard hereon are always available at the always evolving harryshearer.com. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks. And thanks as always to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica. Santa Monica?
Hi, everybody. This is Tom Jones, Santa Monica, home of the homeless.